Diocesan Convention of the Diocese of Pittsburgh voted in a way that we think is illegal, effectively, to leave the Episcopal Church.
That's Catherine Jefford Shorey, presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church USA, speaking yesterday at Washington National Cathedral about some dioceses that have decided or will decide, perhaps, to leave that denomination, the oldest Protestant denomination in the United States, the province of Anglicanism in the United States, the Episcopal Church USA. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Well, this has been brewing for some time now. And of course, it wasn't just one thing that brought about this fragmentation. And of course, the fragmentation was already underway even before there were votes to leave by entire dioceses. But what's going on in the Episcopal Church USA? And why should someone who isn't an Anglican or a member of the Episcopal Church even care? We will find out here in the next 10 minutes of Issues Etc. You can join us with questions or comments. 1-877-623-MYIE. We're coming to you live this Monday, the 6th of October. 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. A little later in our program, we'll be talking about sexual sins. Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy will be our guest. Father Jonathan Millard is our guest for the next 10 minutes, rector of the Church of the Ascension in Pittsburgh and spokesperson for the Coalition for Realignment. Father Millard, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Todd.
Good
to be with you.
The vote of the Pittsburgh Diocese to exit the Episcopal Church USA, is this unprecedented in the Episcopal Church?
Actually, no, not quite. The Diocese of San Joaquin did this very same thing last year, and there are two more dioceses about to take a similar decision, Fort Worth in Texas and the Diocese of Quincy. But actually, in history, there is some historical precedent for this going way back to the Civil War era, although that's not very noble circumstances. As a matter of fact, some of the southern dioceses did separate themselves from the National Episcopal Church at that time.
Bishop Catherine Jefford Shorey claims that the vote of the Pittsburgh Diocese to leave the Episcopal Church USA is illegal, effectively, her words. What does she mean, and is she right?
Well, I guess you'd have to ask her what she means, but no, I do not think she's right. I mean, one of the mantras that we've been hearing from the National Church is that people can leave, but parishes and dioceses cannot leave. But there's absolutely nothing in the canons and constitutions of the Episcopal Church to support that position.
I'm wondering, I mean, what would they possibly envision if, say, the entire population of a parish were to leave? Is this merely a question of property, or is it a question of we're going to keep the church even if there's no rector, priest, or people?
Well, I mean, sadly, it is a question of property, and claim is being, you know, made to all the properties. But in a place like Pittsburgh, and I mean, if I speak for my own parish, where the congregation is more than 90% in support of and in favor of what we're doing, it's just ludicrous to suggest that either we can't do it or we shouldn't do it. But what is, I think, very significant here is this isn't just a few parishes. This is a whole diocese. And in a sense, historically and ecclesiastically, the essential unit of the church, in our ecclesiology at least, has been the bishop and the diocese. I mean, that goes way back into early church history.
So what becomes now of, let's just talk about the Pittsburgh diocese. What becomes of the Pittsburgh diocese? A bishop, I assume, is exiting with the diocese. So what jurisdiction do they find themselves in, if any?
Yeah, well, the Episcopal Diocese of Pittsburgh has realigned to the province of the Southern Cone. We're still Anglicans. We're still the Episcopal Diocese of Pittsburgh. By the act of convention on Saturday, the whole diocese has realigned. Now, of course, there are some parishes who don't want to be a part of it. There'll be no coercion on them. They will be free to align themselves back to the Episcopal Church. They'll have to set up a new diocese. They'll have to reorganize what was here. But the diocese has now realigned. I mean, that's the legal fact of the matter. I mean, again, that's going to be challenged, but I think the facts are really quite clear.
Well, in fact, Catherine Jefferts Schori, it seems to intimate in her public comments that you simply can't do that. This is a geographical reality, and if you want to, say, have an African bishop or a Southern American bishop oversee your parishes, that's just not going to happen. How do you respond?
Well, we have a Pittsburgh bishop, an American bishop, Robert Duncan. We're not going anywhere geographically. I mean, the Episcopal Church USA is only a part of the worldwide Anglican Church because it's in communion with Canterbury and the other provinces around the world. And we are in union with Canterbury and the Anglican Communion through the Diocese of Pittsburgh and now through the province of the Southern Cone. I mean, you know, the presiding bishop can say we can't do it, but we just did it. We did it on Saturday.
Any word from broader Anglicanism on this move?
Yes. I mean, I think we have been tremendously encouraged, not only from broader Anglicanism, where we've seen overwhelming support. Already, more than half of the world's practicing Anglicans, through their bishops, have supported Bishop Duncan and what we've done. So that's been tremendous. But we have had so much encouragement from the ecumenical community, right across denominational bounds, from Pentecostals, the Roman Catholics, to all kinds of people who have stood with us and have been praying for us and supporting us. And we're just really encouraged and just buoyed up by this. Yeah.
Father Millard, I'd like your reaction to something that Bishop Catherine Jefferts Schori said yesterday. She said that instead of fighting about homosexuality, Episcopalians should focus on helping the poor.
That's the immediate cry of the gospel, not who's married to whom or who is adopting children and who shouldn't, who is serving as a bishop in the church.
Your response, Father Millard?
Well, I think she's setting up a false dichotomy. Of course we should be concerned for the poor, and we are. We are in Pittsburgh with the ministries that we have to the homeless, which are thriving, and in many, many other ways, through international relief and development, through short-term mission trips, through missionaries, through many, many things. I mean, that's clearly part of the gospel. But it's part of the gospel also is the transformation of lives, and where there is sexual brokenness, where there is immorality of any sort, where there is pride, where there is lust, whatever it is, the gospel is about Jesus Christ transforming lives. And so the good news of the gospel is good news for all people. It's good news for the gay and lesbian person. It's good news for everybody. But the good news is about transformation, not just blessing everything as it is in states of brokenness.
Is this schism? Some would say that it in fact is. You said a moment ago that the Pittsburgh Diocese remains in union with worldwide Anglicanism through Canterbury. Explain that.
Yes. You know, in a sense, what we've done is to try and draw back from schism. You know, before the ordination of Gene Robinson in 2003, the worldwide Anglican Church said to the American Church, please don't do this, because if you do, it will tear the fabric of the Anglican Communion. And of course, the church here in the U.S. went ahead and did it, and just as we thought would happen, the worldwide fabric has been torn. So that as of right now, most of the world's Anglicans are in either broken or impaired communion with the Episcopal Church. So what we're doing by realigning to a faithful Orthodox province, which happens to be in South America, we are really making sure that we stay in line not only with Anglicanism, but actually with the worldwide Christian Church, the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. The schism is what's going on by the Episcopal Church USA's unwillingness to bring itself back into line with traditional Christian teaching.
These are only the first. San Joaquin, Pittsburgh, you mentioned Quincy and Fort Worth. That's wondering right. If there are more to come on the horizon after that.
Well, I think there might be. I don't think it's my place to say who might be next. But what we are seeing, of course, is individual parishes all the way across the country wanting to become a part of this movement. And again, one of the exciting developments that I think you can look for in the next few months will be the recognition of a new province here in North America for both the United States and Canada. And I think that is something that will be recognized soon, I hope and pray, by the many of the primates of the Anglican Church.
Will it include these dioceses that have severed their relationship with the Episcopal Church USA?
Absolutely, and many other parishes besides, and not just those groups, but it's been a tremendous work, I believe, of the Holy Spirit bringing together many of the fractured pieces of Anglicanism that have been going on for many, many years, actually, as different ones have become reached the point where in conscience they can't stay with the Episcopal Church. And through the Common Cause Partnership, these parishes and dioceses and kind of breakaway churches are being brought back together. And that's a very positive step.
Father Jonathan Millard is rector of the Church of the Ascension in Pittsburgh, spokesperson for the Coalition for Realignment. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, and God bless you.
When we come back from this break, we're going to discuss sexual sins. Why is it that Scripture, especially Paul's epistles, devote so much time to the outbreaks and the problem of sexual offense and sexual immorality? Pastor Peter Bender will answer that question for us, and we'll have a conversation to round off today's issues, etc. Stay tuned. We'll talk sexual sins after this. Issues, etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues, etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues, etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues, etc.
618-223-8384. It's the new phone number for the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8384. Leery about calling a live radio talk show? Want to remain anonymous? Leave your recorded question or comment on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. The good, the bad, the ugly. We're big boys. We can take it. 618-223-8384.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
When does a baby get rights?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
In the middle of the abortion debate is the question over when a human baby receives human rights. According to Ken Connor from the Center for a Just Society, science demonstrates that a baby is a human at conception. Within 24 hours of fertilization, a human egg begins the transformation to an embryo. Already it has 23 chromosomes from each parent to form a unique person. Already many of the child's physical traits, such as sex, eye, and hair color, have been determined. It's a process that is simple yet profound. And it begins at conception.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.